Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is Insurgent Radio Network calling from Northern Indiana, North Central Indiana, P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And it is February the 15th, 2017, and we're ready to go here. You know, I read from the Pessimist's Guide to World History quite a while, several weeks, and I laid off of it for a while because I thought it was too pessimistic. But I dug it back out again, and let's get pessimist. Yeah. 1889 to 1890, the worldwide flu epidemic, the Asiatic influenza epidemic, began in May 1889 in Russia, struck North America in the following December, and spread throughout the world, reaching Australia by March of 1890. Though no figures for the number of deaths available, in Germany alone, an estimated 1% of the population died. And it cleaned out a lot of people in this country, too. Cleaned up the gene pool. 1891, the rescue of the British harpooner. While at sea in February, a harpooner aboard a British whaling boat accidentally fell overboard and was swallowed up by none other than the whale he had been hunting, which puts the old rumor to death that whales didn't swallow humans. One might suppose that such accidents happened from time to time in a dangerous profession like whaling, but what happened next was beyond belief. 2 hours later, the whaler's shipmates hauled aboard the whale they had just killed. As usual, work began immediately on cutting off the huge carcass, until one sailor noticed something odd about the whale's stomach. When they cut it open, out fell a missing harpooner, still very much alive. The strain of having been so close to death in those strange circumstances left the man temporarily insane, but he recovered after 2 weeks. He told his shipmates that the heat and the humidity in the whale's stomach had been especially unbearable, though he had been able to breathe well enough. For the record, the harpooner's name was not Jonah. Yeah. 1891, Swiss railroad bridge collapses and kills 120. A newly constructed bridge over the Birs River near Basel, Switzerland, collapsed when a train made up of 2 locomotives and 12 passenger cars moved out into it. The 2 locomotives and 3 passenger cars dropped to the river below, killing or severely injuring all those aboard. The Swiss have long been known for their exactitude of these pioneering projects, so that was an odd situation. 1891, the Caribbean hurricane, a powerful hurricane, battered the island of Martinique on August the 18th, and in just 4 hours killed about 700 people and caused over $10 million in damages. 1891, earthquakes shakes up central Japan. On October 28th, one of the most powerful earthquake shocks ever recorded hit heavily populated central Japan, instantly shifting the ground by up to 40 feet along a 60-mile fault. About 200,000 houses and 10,000 bridges were knocked down, and 7,300 people were killed. And let me remind you, boys and girls, this could happen anytime, any place. Some places seem to be more vulnerable than others, such as, you know, California and so forth, but Oklahoma, due to fracking's having earthquakes, and there's a big fault runs right down through here in the Midwest too, so we could have a big one, you never know. 1892, Oil City, Pennsylvania catches fire. Heavy rains in the previous month had already caused flooding at Oil City when on June 4th a thunderstorm broke over the city. Suddenly there was a loud explosion, and flaming oil, apparently loosed from a ruptured storage tank, began flowing on the rushing floodwater straight into the town of Oil City and nearby Titusville as well. The fire killed 130 people and destroyed both towns. 1892, Lizzie Borden axe murderers. On the morning of August the 4th, in their home at Fall River, Massachusetts, Abby Borden was hacked to death with 19 blows from an axe, and her husband was likely killed by 11 blows to the head. Well, she must have liked him better. Though daughter Lizzie was the prime suspect in the brutal murders, she was acquitted after one of the most sensational trials in U.S. history. She lived quietly in Fall River until her death in 1927. Lizzie's story spawned a lot of literature and one ballet. 1893, hurricane kills 1,000 in the South. An Atlantic hurricane with winds up to 100 miles per hour, torrential rains, and heavy seas roared into Georgia and South Carolina on August 28, leaving the coastal areas of Savannah and Charleston in ruins. The storm raged from the afternoon to midnight, smashing houses, ripping up trees, destroying boats, and flooding coastal lands. One witness described Charleston as looking as if it had been passed through a great siege of shot and shell and subsequent deluge. Ancient trees lay toppled, tangled in the wreckage of houses. Parris Island, South Carolina, was swamped under 15 feet of water, and a tidal wave at Port Royal, South Carolina, wiped out the entire town. The storm killed an estimated 1,000 people. Well, it's a good thing that Marine training base wasn't there at Parris Island. There'd have been a lot of dead Marines. Well, that's it for now, from the pessimist guy to history. I hope that was pessimistic enough for you. When I go downtown doing my shopping and things like that, people I know on the street are always saying, "How you doing, Tom?" And I say, "Well, I'm doing fine, except when I watch the news." They all get a big laugh out of that. Got a note from Stray Dog here. What has he got to say? Another non-winter with only one day with snow cover. The farmers like to plow and plant before a snow. I have worked 100 different jobs. Farming is the most rewarding. Growing food from nothing. Turn an empty field into a way to feed yourself and trade food for what you need. Let's run more information on war criminals like Eisenhower and how he starved 1.5 million of our fellow Germans. I watched the documentary, The Greatest Story Never Told. They had a chapter on Ike's war crimes. While watching it, my hair on my arms was straight out. We will bring them to justice, so help me on my honor. Good to be with you. With much admiration. Thank you, Stray Dog.
And do everything you say. California's already saying no. There's 10 or 15 states that they could follow them. Now, what happens then? LaSalle succeeded in the Civil War. We'll see what happens. But I think the only way we may come together as a country, when we realize, oh my God, if we don't find some way to work this out together, we're going to split in two. And we're not going to have the power we had.
So let me ask you this. We just saw that Jim Rogers said the death of cash is coming, total government control of spending. We've seen this in India. We're seeing the beginnings of it in Australia. I read a book recently called Define Hitler that really, when I read how Weimar Republic got out of their problems, I thought, oh my gosh, they actually thought that worked. They thought that was a good thing. And I think the central banks have looked at that lesson and said, well, we could always do that. You look at this with the inflating of the money, because we were worried about deflation, the inflating of the money, the growing government control, Now they're starting to digitize currency.
They crippled their consumers and came out the other side are growing at 4% again. They took their medicine instead of endless bailout,
mm-hmm.
endless denial. Bail-ins, you go and take the best small businesses and large businesses and high net worth deposits over 100,000 and have those people bail out a bank, and you think they'll ever put money in a bank again and people won't have pitchforks? So all of this reaction is coming from the fact that governments are not facing the problem. Politicians are not telling people, like in Puerto Rico, which they've enforced you, that we are bankrupt. We are way more bankrupt than Puerto Rico.
But we can't declare bankruptcy. The United States can't default on their debt.
No. But you can restructure, especially private debt. What businesses do when businesses get in trouble in the economy, it used to be Chapter 7, fire sale and get 10 cents on the dollar, the bolster creditors come in. The U.S. was the one that innovated Chapter 11. Let the courts protect the business for a short period of time so they can sell off their assets in an orderly manner instead of fire sale. Have time to renegotiate with creditors and say, hey, what if we pay you 50 cents instead of you getting 10% of fire sale? And then they come to an agreement and everything moves forward. We need that. We have to write off debt. You can't keep bailing out banks and things in countries like Greece. You have to restructure the debt and let the banks and the bondholders and the equity investors who took the risk on those things take losses. And then if governments do provide some financial assistance, it's only in direct correlation to the amount that banks...
Well, that's just a little bit of the whining from the right. Glenn Pecker. They're going crazy now. They all see the handwriting on the wall. It's not going to come together. Trump's not going to straighten it out. He's going to try, but it's impossible. The debt and everything is just too much, and a big bubble is going to pop. And worse is better, I keep telling you. But it may not be better for each individual person like you and me. But if the white race is going to survive, it's coming on the scene now, because it's not going to come together. The crazy-ass left-wingers are helping us. I encourage, get out of the street, left-wing. Break the windows out. Burn the house down. Yeah, that's great, man. I'll tell you, that's some of us, a percentage of us, are going to survive this thing. And that's something to build on, but to try to choose a side to get on that's there now is ridiculous. Republican or Democrat, Trump or Hillary. Hillary was evil. She was, politically speaking, she was evil. Trump is educated in a different way, but he don't quite understand the situation. And there's something loose in the bell attic with Trump. He's going to continue to make bad, bad mistakes. And whether he'll finish this term is a very good question. But all the white people out there that are still out there are grasping at straws. They're like a man floating down a creek, reaching out for this piece of wood that won't float him down the river, and he'll jump to another piece of wood, and that's not good enough either, until he may learn that none of the chunks of wood are going to save him. He's got to get out of the river. And that's what you got to do. Get out of the river. Stay out of the river. Build your own little country, your own little system right there where you're at. Because it's going to be a rocky ride. It's going to be a rocky road. I'm going to play something that was recorded. I don't know when it was recorded, but somebody was interviewing me about about war and what it's all about. I haven't even listened to it.
The White Aryan Resistance is simply an association, a voluntary association of a lot of people who are interested in one thing, and that's the race issue and the well-being of the white race, or at least the part of the white race that gives a damn. On other issues, they may disagree, but on the number one issue, it's race. And so these people are all over the place, and we're not a membership organization, and we have very few meetings. We have no rallies. But we try to recruit from professionals and all people from all walks of life that will work on that particular issue.
And how'd you go about recruiting people?
They come to us. We make ourselves available as far as a website and phone machine messages, newspaper, and so forth. But to actually work with us, they have to come to us and ask.
Are you the founding father of it?
Yes. 1983.
What caused you to start it up?
Well, I'd been involved in right-wing politics ever since 1964. I went through the John Birch Society for many years. I got into the anti-tax movement during the Vietnam War. I got involved with the Klan in 1975 and ran the Klan here in California.
You were a wizard, weren't you?
I never referred to myself as a wizard. I referred to myself as a state leader. Those were the terms that were used back in the old days, and I didn't use those.
The word Aryan is in the middle of the...
Yes.
What does that mean to you? What is the definition that you believe an Aryan is, especially in this country?
Well, the word means noble, noble one. And we figure a certain number of the people in the white race are active enough and care enough about their race that they can be considered noble ones or Aryans. And that's the way I use it, because much of the white race, I would not even refer to them as Aryans, even though biologically you might be able to make that case. They're actually enemies of their own race. So it's only a percentage of the white race that I would care to give them that term.
So the only areas you're interested in are the ones that agree with what you agree with?
Well, on the basic issue. Now, we disagree on all kinds of things, tactics, all kinds of things, religion, all kinds of things, but we must agree on the best interests of the white race.
And what do you think they are?
Right now, it's survival, because we're talking about a race that's dropping in numbers like a rock, you know, considering abortion, wars, and all the things, that and race mixing. And so we're looking at a possible meltdown of the race. And we can't talk.
Sorry, boys and girls, that was supposed to be a full track of about half an hour, maybe an hour. But somehow I only got a little... few minutes of it. Sorry about that. I'll find something else for you. I heard them talking about a book from the right wing, but I don't think he's right wing. He's more of a economics guy. And the name of the book is The Sale of a Lifetime. And he goes on and on about the coming revolution, civil war, and so forth in this country. Duh, took him a long time to figure that out. Chemistry is all there. I mean, there's no way of escaping it. Unless they use the whole military to make it one big giant police state, which they could try, but I don't think that'll work either. There's too much bad blood between the Jewish left and the Jewish right. Whoa, wait a minute. Oh, we got off to a rocky start here, but let's go back to 1996, and I dug out another one of our shows, an interview with a fellow that was involved with us a long time ago. So let's listen to this. Now, I'm recording this from Mike, off a tape recorder to Mike, so it's not going to be the super quality. The original copy wasn't super, super good, so anyhow, I hope you could understand it. Mine, my whole hour is only 10
meg?
Yeah.
of the recording. I could make it a little smaller this week.
Yeah, well, maybe that's it, too.
All right, hold on a minute. I'll put you on here.
Can't believe it. That's an old Hal Turner tape, who turned out to be an FBI informant. Jeez. Oh, man. Well, anyhow, we're going to play it, and you can make up your mind.
Seven line, you know, 24 hours, 615-676-4109. That's 615-676-4109. And the big website is resist.com. And at the same time, you send us gobs of money to the insurgent. And that's at 2267 Temecula, California, 92593. And make sure you say the insurgent, not Tom Metzger. And at the same time, send gobs of money to Hal Turner and the network, which is the only network that I know of like this in the world. The most radical, the more racist, the most irreverent, the most seditious network that's possible to receive. Well, it's been a great day because every day has been a great day for a long time because what conservative reactionaries see as bad, Terrible Tommy sees as good. Worse is better. We are not reactionary. We are not conservative. We're not liberal. We're radical. We're revolutionary. Well, and to show you how revolutionary we are, and to threaten you with the fact that if you don't call into this radio show, I'm going to sing. And I'm going to sing a lot until you get straight. So here we are. Let's do it. I'm going to do it. If that ain't country, I'll kiss your ass. Hold on, boys. Wasn't song again. Caller, come on in.
How you doing? This is my Jeff from the American Holocaust.
Hey, this is my lone wolf from Southern Cal.
How you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing? What's your idea today?
This is Jeff from the American Holocaust. Get warehouses and U-Haul trucks. Pick up wetbacks looking for work at the hardware store. Pile them in the U-Haul trucks, take them down to the warehouses, and get creative. Just an idea for the American public.
Well, I saw something like that on TV. Comedy guy, he was going down to the place where they pick them all up, and then he was taking them down to the INS. But maybe your idea is even more creative. Guess them all. Guess them all. The long and the short and the tall. Pass all the, guess all the peace creeps and race mixers too. We'll watch them all go right up the flue, because we're coming to power at last. And that's when the traitors get gassed. The final solution might bring air pollution, but oh, what the hell, gas them all. How'd you like that? Oh, I told you I'm radical. Yes, I am. And I'm not reactionary. I was a reactionary way back. And I got out of being reactionary. Now I'm looking for prey. Paris, France. The torture killing of a young Jew in Paris and three such attacks since are seen as rising signs of anti-Jewism among France's Muslims, says a report. Caller, come on in. Hi, Cooper from Northern California.
I live in Barstow.
Barstow. Beautiful downtown Barstow.
Yeah.
I've been to some skinhead sing-alongs up there in Barstow.
Yeah, and I just hate it up here. My brother's in a couple of bands, and I've been going to concerts, and he's been teaching me stuff that is just about the order.
Yes. Right. Right. Great.
You really get involved in the movement and know it's not just about hate, it's about knowing your heritage, knowing knowledge and all the stuff about
that. Absolutely. First you have to love, and then you hate anyone who's trying to destroy that love. And the love is for the family, for the individual, and the race. And then after that, anybody who interferes with that, it's free hate.
You're just one of my idols, not the dying. Well, right now.
Well, thanks a lot. Now, look, have you ever been to one of those skinhead concerts there in Barstow?
Not in Barstow, but in Orange County.
Orange County. Did you ever go down to that the shack down there? Or was that closed before they had one that you could go to?
I'm not sure.
They have a place down there called the shack. We used to have some pretty good concerts down there, yeah. Well, I'm glad you're, pardon me?
You've met my brother a couple times.
I'm sure I have. I've met a lot of people, and a lot of good people out there, and a lot of no-nonsense people out there.
Yeah.
And that's what we're looking for. We're not looking for mamby-pamby. We're not looking for people that are just thinking short time. We're talking about soldiers. We're building an army. We're building a racial army. And we do not want to see our soldiers go down for dumb things, right?
Exactly.
Let's keep our powder dry for the big one. The big one is coming. Cooper, the big one is coming.
I'm only 16 years old right now, and I know more than most 40-year-olds.
I wish I knew what you know right now when I was 16. I didn't know shit from Shinola when I was... Pardon me?
I read all the time now, just books and books.
Well, when I was 16, I didn't know shit from Shinola, and I ran off at 18 and joined the Army, and I wish that I would have known what you already know, because by the time you're 25, you're probably going to be a general in the underground Aryan Army. How about that?
That would be really helpful.
Because it's going to be the young people, it's all you young people, our generation screwed it up. Our generation dropped the ball. And a generation even before us dropped the ball. So there's a few of us old radicals around, but for the most part, we got to understand that it's your generation, and we got to back you up 100% because you're going to bring it on. Do you understand? Great. It's good talking to you, Cooper. Call back on Thursday night, okay?
All right, thank you.
Thank you. All right, there's Cooper from Northern California. 16. Caller, come on in.
Hi.
Hi, Frank from Cleveland.
Hey, I just wanted to say I'm loving your show. I'm a guy who's ordered, a bunch of stuff from war in the past and the newspaper and everything.
Good, I recognize your voice.
Yeah, I've called into your hotline.
Yeah, right.
Where did you get that opening Nature Wolf music?
Well, I've had it around for quite a while. I'm not sure. It was some kind of tape that was given to me a long time ago from a nature. It was a nature tape. And in fact, it's not only the wolves howling there, but my own dog. I have a half-wolf dog. And every time I play those wolves howling, he takes off. Like, I don't care if he's upstairs or he's half a block away. If he hears those wolves going, he starts howling.
Yeah, it's just really beautiful. I mean, whoever recorded that initially, you could tell that microphone's really close to some real wolves.
Right.
It's a great intro piece.
Well,
anyway, anyway,
go ahead, Mr. Go ahead. No, you're the caller. You got the question. You got the comments. Go ahead.
Well, that was my primary question. I just, as a point of curiosity, I just acquired a reproduction of a 7th century hand harp.
Wow.
Called a Viking harp. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm going to try to make some kind of recording with mixing the harp music with maybe some wolves howling in the background.
That is beautiful. That would be beautiful. Do it and send us a copy.
I'll work on it.
That would be great.
Oh, one question. It just popped in my head again.
Sure.
I remember you referencing some time ago on your hotline message an ancient quotation where the Israelites were described as short, swarthy, kinky-haired, basically Jerry Seinfeld look-alike. And I was wondering if you might, in the interim between this show and next, find the source for that.
That is sad. I had that book in my library, and I have a very large library. I had to get rid of some of it when I relocated. But I looked high and low for that book, but it was about an Assyrian person who was sent to the court of the judges in Israel, and he documented what he saw. And in that documentation, he said that these Israelites are a dark, swarthy people, kinky hair.
It's obvious to me they weren't white because, as has been pointed out in other books, among them Ben Clausen's work, there's nothing like heathen honor in the Old Testament. I mean, just the spirit of how the Israelites operated and how they interacted with reality and other people was just so different from the spirit one gets from reading the, the pagan heathen.
Yes. I'm sad to see Aryans that would buy into the Old Testament stories because some of them are so bad,
so obvious. Like Joseph goes to Egypt and he basically becomes, the typical stuck-up Jew, the way these Jews sidle up to George W. Bush.
Right.
Obvious that how the Israelites are operating in the Old Testament parallels how Jews operate today, and does not parallel, say, the behavior of the ancient Norsemen or the Anglo-Saxons or any other heathen.
Well, there certainly was no Aryan honor in so many things that you read from the Old Testament. It's just right. The absolute reverse of that is dishonor. That the many things that we've all been raised on in Sunday school and told were good things, but they were actually... have nothing to do with Aryan honor.
Exactly. And I think people could get a good sense of that just by reading the Eddas or basically any old Aryan folklore, even Grimm's fairy tales, folk tales, anything like that, and how sharply the spirit of those works contrast with the Old Testament writings. But anyway, what about that book you were offering for more British Israel, something, British Israel, is that the title of it?
Yes, I've got a packet of those books. I think I sell for $25 donation, and it gives, yeah. it destroys all these myths. It destroys all these myths. And
I'm wondering if that book has in it perhaps that reference.
Well,
the description of the ancient Israelites. Well, anyway, I guess the only way to know would be for me to get a hold of it, right?
You're right. That's right. And even Ethan Allen was a very strong resister of the Israeli kind of religion. Ethan Allen, you know, a hero of the revolution.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what's his name? Boy, I've got a mental block here. Do you ever get those? Anyhow, we got to go on now, and thanks for the call.
Hey, take care. Thanks.
Thursday night, call back again. Hey, okay. So, anyhow, I was thinking about the father of the American Revolution. I can't even remember his name. Boy, I'm really getting bad. Not George Washington, no. He was very wealthy. His wife was wealthy, at least. And most of the revolution was over property and money and so forth, like it usually is. Oh, I know, you conservatives are going to upset the hell out of you. But the revolution didn't do much to help the working man. Didn't help much to help the white people. In general, it was mainly a struggle against the nouveau rich in the colonies and the old rich in England. I was telling you about, in France, the torture killing of a young Jew in Paris, and three such attacks since are seen as signs of a rising anti-Jewism among France's Muslims. You know, they say anti-Semitism, but that can't be true because, obviously, so many of the Arabs are Semitic themselves. So why do they keep saying anti-Semitism? No, it's anti-Jewism. Police say the recent death of Ilyan Hamami, whose body was dumped in a vacant lot, was followed last week by three attacks on Jews by Arab and African immigrants, reports the Boston Globe. None of the victims of the latest incidents were seriously injured. Well, then what's the big deal? Well, I guess we ought to, you know, I hate to say it, import some of you guys in the United States that they may sort of talk to the Jews and try to get their mind right. Amsterdam, sales of orange replica Nazi helmets aimed at Dutch soccer fans attending the Soccer World Cup have tripled since they were banned by the Dutch stadiums this month. The helmet's producer said, Friday, this is what I always tell you, reactionaries work in our favor. The system is reactionary. Our enemies are all reactionary. That's why whatever you do, any little thing you do, like the boys are going up to Lansing and do a demonstration on the 22nd of April up there, and they just get all upset. They get excited. Your enemies get excited. Football's governing body in the Netherlands, the KNVD. Ooh, that's like... sound from walk out the front door. I was offended. I didn't even have to walk out the front door. I could hear the goddamn Mexican music floating in from the neighbor next door. And I was offended. When I went into the grocery store, I was offended. Looking at all these pepper-bellied Mexicans with all these little kids. Now they not only have a baby buggy for one or two kids, they got tandem where they can put four kids. And they're all on the welfare, boys. You're paying for the whole thing. Are you offended? I'm offended. I am extremely offended. The ban applies to all other home games for the national team, although the KNVD has no power to ban them in Germany. Yeah, but you know the Germans will. We are now selling three times the previous average daily volume, said the helmet's producer, Florian Van Laar. We are thinking of sending the KNVD a gold helmet in thanks. Now, there you go. I like guys like that. They said, we're going to ban your German Nazi-type helmets from the games. And he says, okay, that's great. And that's good. That's really good. Always get your enemy reacting against you. Don't react against your enemy. Get them reacting against you. Hey, call 201. Where are we at here? 201-484-7809. Has this telephone gone dead? I'll sing a song if you don't call me. I'm telling you. Knight Ridder, the second largest newspaper company in the United States, agreed last night to sell itself for $4.5 billion in cash. And you tell me there's nothing, no big profit in the newspaper business? And stock to the McClatchy Company, a publisher half its size, according to people involved in the negotiations. Now, this is very important because there's only a very few people now controlling all the newspapers in the United States. The deal, which is expected to be announced today, comes as the newspaper industry is gripped by uncertainty. Yeah, because people are saying, screw it, going to the web. The web. They're going to the web. The hell with newspapers. Readers have begun to drift away from printed newspapers as their websites have experienced sharp gain use. Okay? The sale may help assert some investors who are nervous about the values of newspaper companies, and I hope they all go broke. I hope they all go broke. Nothing could make me happier than all the major newspapers, all these national corporations go broke. They've been screwing with our people's minds for decades. Whoa! Hurdles for prosecutors in prison murders. Federal prosecutors could be hard-pressed to win death sentences when one of the biggest capital cases in U.S. history, an attempt by the government to take down the Aryan Brotherhood prison gang, gets underway this week. However, many of the 16 defendants who could face the death penalty are already serving long prison terms. Nearly all the victims were themselves dangerous thugs. Yes, they were niggers. And the prosecution witnesses are likely to be jailhouse informants who could be despicable characters themselves. Quote, the dynamics could not be as good for prosecutors as they think they are, he said. Prosecutors declined to be interviewed. Well, in this case, I side with the Aryan Brotherhood. Almost all these murders inside the prison took place against black gangs. They don't talk about that. Oh, these terrible guys were just killing people. Well, they were killing niggers. That's what they were killing. So give the Aryan Brotherhood a break. I don't have to agree with everything they did, but give them a break. Call her. Come on in. Hi, Dave from Alaska. How's the weather?
It's colder than a well digger's ass.
Oh, we used to say the well digger's heel.
It could be a witch's tit and a brass saw.
That's true. I've heard that too. So anyhow, what's new up there? Are you kicking ass in Alaska?
You know, we're doing pretty good. I got all the local boys to quit getting themselves arrested, and that seemed to make the work go a little further.
There you go. You got to fight smart.
That's right.
Yeah, you're far more dangerous when you fight smart.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things that we run into, of course, up here is like the geographical challenge of organizing or just getting out and networking with a bunch of guys.
Well, make sure when you're organizing, you're just organizing individuals that are leadership types. Forget
that's
them.
All we do now.
Yeah, the bulk of them are not worth a damn.
Yeah, that's all that's done up there now.
Yeah.
It was different, but, you know, we've got a different way of doing things. Hey, you know, I called, let's see, tomorrow is 26 years since the Oceanside riot.
Oh, I almost forgot about that.
That's what I'm here for.
Oh, man, that was a fun time. That was well planned out. You know, a lot of people who do these things think that you can just go down, take a few guys, and show up, and everything's going to be okay. No way. You've got to plan these things. And that was one of the most well-planned deals that I ever pulled off. And we fought with the city for weeks and weeks. And then the mayor, who was the ex-general commandant of the Marine Corps in Camp Pendleton, told us that he stuck his finger in my face and said, "Don't come here on Sunday." And that was the day we were going to do it. And I said, "I'll be there." And so we showed up there, and we had our men, and they had their creeps that came from L.A. and all over the place. And we had one hell of a riot, and none of our guys got seriously hurt, and none of our guys went to jail, and there were a lot of guys on the other side left with bruises and so forth, and heads beaten in. You know, I did that when I was running for Congress. I was in the primary running for United States Congress.
Did you run as a Democrat?
I ran as a Democrat because I was a poor boy. You know, you got to be a rich boy to run as a Republican.
Oh, for sure.
And, of course, the Democrats went crazy, all the homos and everybody in the Democrat Party. Oh, my God, what the hell's going on? And they set out to defeat me, but they lost, and I won the Democratic nomination for Congress in Southern California as the leader of the Klan. Now, that really upset people all across the country. And then they brought big money. They brought so much Jew money in to support my the guy who I was running against, Claire Bergner. It was unbelievable, even though they'd never brought money in from out of town before. But in this case, they brought tons of money in to Claire Bergner. Of course, I lost the general election, but he spent $250,000. I spent $25,000, so that's the way that goes.
Well, you still got like 70-something thousand votes.
Well, actually, it was about 60,000 votes, and I never will forget that came along about midnight, and all us boys were kicking back in my house, and the call came in and said, "Well, Metzger, what do you got to say? You lost." And I said, "Well, I don't know. We'll wait till morning." Well, morning came around, and all the vote came in from the working class neighborhoods of Imperial County and Riverside County, and that was all the white working class guys, and I won. And the press didn't know what to do about that. Along the beach where all the rich bitches live, I didn't do well at all. But in the working class neighborhoods, I did great.
Yeah, I can imagine. That makes sense.
Anyhow, it was quite a... Go ahead.
Oh, well, I was going to say, you know, I got that off... I subscribed to War... for a long time.
Yeah.
Ordered your calendars and that.
Sure.
You know, I still use those. Nobody's ever been able to put out any kind of calendar, you know, that's got like, you know, Frank Silva's birthday.
Sure.
Or, you know, Dietrich Eckhart, you know.
Yes.
That's what I'm looking at here in front of me. March 1993. And there's great stuff in it.
That's right. And we should put out some more. We haven't put out one for a long time. There was a Canadian fellow, I believe it was, that was putting them out, and we were getting them from him, but I think it's time to do a new one.
Yeah, you know, I was a soldier in Sinai, Egypt, there with the peacekeepers.
Oh, wow.
An infantry guy in 1990, and I think 91. and I read about you in the Stars and Stripes.
No kidding.
Over the Bart Simpson t-shirt lawsuit.
That was one of
the... There's kind of byline in there. And so I read White Aryan Resistance, and I just read Mein Kampf. And, you know, we're going over to Israel, seeing Jews.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tel Aviv is party central, I got to tell you. But we were going over there back and forth, and we had all of these niggers in our unit that were black nationalists, a whole platoon of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, they kept attacking myself and other white guys.
Yeah.
So we banded together, and when we saw war, the White Aryan Resistance, in the paper,
yes.
I went and I called information to Fallbrook, California, from Egypt, and got your phone number,
yeah.
You know, and then we started calling. I'd record your Aryan alert message
right.
Every week, and we'd all play it in our barracks room listening to it. It was great. We actually went and got some Nazi Bart Simpson shirts made of our own down there in Sharm el Sheikh. And we got like 70 of them made. I mean, they sold right away. Officers were buying them. So anyway.
That reminds me, you know, that reminds me of Desert Storm. We had our guys over there calling me on cell phones, and and one guy was in a battery there in Israel, and the Scuds were coming in, and he was calling me on the phone, telling me, "Whoa, there goes one right over to my head." You know, that's what's great about the lone wolf. The lone wolf doesn't necessarily have to connect to any organization or anything, like carry a membership card or anything else, and he's out there, man, and he's in everything. And it's absolutely amazing, some of the reports I get back from anonymous people. And,
yeah, well, yep. I agree. And, you know, just a central, you know, you're like a central point, you know, handing out ideology and inspiration. And all of these people can see it. And even when the controlled media reports on you, they're slicing their own throat.
You know that. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I mean, we have probably had 25 guys who we were just kind of, you know, handing around Mein Kampf, and I think some of us read that book by Alex Haley, Malcolm X,
yes.
Just to piss us off. And, you know, once we started listening to you every week, and, you know, we could buy things from you and subscribe to your newspaper and all of that.
Yes.
It started to solidify what we were thinking already and kind of give us more of a concrete feel. And we brought that back to our division in California. When we were all in the 7th Infantry Division up there at Fort Ord.
Yes.
And, you know, I know guys who came down there and started going to some of your different meetings. One of them that you had James Mason.
Yes. Yes. James Mason, incidentally, wrote some of the best revolutionary racist stuff that I've ever seen. And,
love that book.
Yeah, he has done a great job at that, and we got to all give him credit because he is an offspring of Joe Tomasik in L.A. Joe Tomasik was the break between the uniform street activity and revolutionary type people. Joe DiMasi took over the
out of Google, they come up with a thread that's on Stormfront. I posted quite a few of the excerpts from Siege. I went ahead and typed them up so other people could read them.
Sure.
Like, you know, and, you know, the We Do Not Wish for Law and Order.
Right.
And then, you know, I love the future belongs to the few of us still willing to get our hands dirty.
Right. That's right.
T-shirt made up with that. It's too classic.
Joe Tomasi is one of the most unsung heroes of the whole movement. Everybody talks about various people in the, like, National Socialist struggle, but Joe Tomasi was a Bob Matthews only about 10, 15 years early. He was going around doing all kinds of stuff, attacking social Marxists and stuff, and one of the funniest things he ever did was the night that he had the premiere for the Holocaust movie, and they brought that 10 bomb gal in from Holland. I forgot her name for sure, but anyhow, right before the show got started, all of a sudden a smoke bomb came rolling down the aisle of the theater, and it cleared the whole theater of this. You know, they had every dignitary in the world there for the premiere of the Holocaust, and they had to stand out in the street for about 2 hours till they cleared the theater out of the smoke and everything else. And when they finally got a hold of the bomb thing there, it said, hi from your friendly Nazi party. They had inscribed it. Those were back in the days when, you know, things would happen, and, you know, people would be pissed off, but it wasn't a big deal. Now today, everything would be a hate crime. You'd be thrown in jail for 100 years. But Joe Tomasi was a real forward thinker, and I was proud to have known him, and proud to have known his wife. And when I met his wife after he'd been killed, she was pregnant, and they, I believe, are back in Oklahoma now. So anyhow, Joe Tomasi deserves a hell of a pat on the back spiritually for what he did for this movement. But yet, I don't hear many of these people in that end that even talk about Joe Tomasi anymore, and that sort of bothers me.
Yeah, I whenever I, well, first I hand Siege around to different people and let them hear it. And you know, another thing that I do is Louis Beam, like his Break the Sword speech that he put on a video.
Yes.
Back in the 80s.
Another old friend of mine.
I mean, well, if you run audio on him, I loaned that video out and I never got it back, but that doesn't matter. I mean, I'd already watched it probably 100 times. You know, some of those videos, especially the way the internet is right now, they would spread like wildfire.
Yes.
And, you know, they would probably influence this whole up-and-coming generation who, you know, I agree about the fallacy of the card-carrying membership organization. I speak out about it now. And I used to be a part of the National Alliance.
Well, we all were part of something.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, you know, I wasn't the first person in the world to back the wrong horse.
Well, it's not so much that we're backing the wrong horse, it's just a difference in tactics that many well-meaning people are carrying cards and belonging to membership organizations, but they got to understand we're behind the Jewish curtain here. I mean, we can't operate like we did 20 years ago. It just isn't going to work.
Yeah, I agree with that. And
the thing, you know, in Oceanside, California, if I did what I did in Oceanside, California today, I'd probably get about a 10-year rap at least in prison. And I never hurt anybody. Yeah.
Well, look what happened with Matt Hale. I mean,
well, yeah, I mean, that is the most totally obscene. So our people have to be smarter. They have to be... They just have to get smarter if they're going to survive in this world. And, of course, it's good in a way because it's evolutionary. You get smart or you get dead.
Absolutely. well, you know, and that's, like, for instance, what's happening in Iraq and Afghanistan and around the world is that these guys, the survivors, they get smart exponentially.
Absolutely.
And I think that if anything could be learned from what's happening over there, and I have lots of friends who are soldiers. I mean, my son-in-law was actually got a Purple Heart getting blown up in a Bradley, and two other incidents. But I mean, he didn't get seriously injured. He just got a Purple Heart because he got a concussion.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, is that the system can be fought, even its heavy combat troops, and that you know, a small bands of people working independently can do huge things.
Of course, all revolutionary groups start that way. They all do, and many of them end up in power. But they don't get there by joining arms and marching down the street like the British did in their red uniforms in the Revolution, where they can just be shot down.
Were you thinking of Patrick Henry?
I love Patrick Henry. He was one of the only.
Is that what you were thinking about just a few minutes ago?
No, I was thinking about Common Sense. What's his name? The guy who wrote.
Mr. Hamilton.
Yeah, no, not Common.
No,
Thomas Paine. He was the father of the American Revolution. We got to go to a break. It's good talking to you in Alaska.
Thank you.
Okay, good night. All right, we got a break here. I understand. We're back here at Insurgent Radio with Terrible Tommy, and guess what? From Nazi hunters to modern foes. Of course, all these bureaucratic people got to find somebody new to chase around. For the past 2 years and a half decades, historians and investigators in a tiny office of special investigations in the Justice Department have been hunting Nazis. We have painstakingly gathered and checked against immigration records and other domestic records nearly 70,000 names of suspected Nazi criminals. Eli Rosenbaum, director of the Office of Special Investigations, told a group of law enforcement officials at a conference at Interpol's headquarters in France. They're still looking for 99-year-old Nazis when there's millions of neo-Nazis all over the place. In recent years, the OSI is towards a natural death. As the number of Nazi suspects dwindled, those few who remained were very old. So what they're doing now is they got to dream up new war criminals. Well, let me give you an example. How about George Bush? How about George Bush and the Attorney General and all these people? They're war criminals. Pursue the bastards. Come on. If I don't get a call here within the next 2 minutes, I'm going to sing another song. So you better call in, or I'm going to sing another song. But anyhow, Rosenbaum, the Jews are running the committee on the OSI deal where they can chase down whoever they think is a war criminal. Of course, most of the Jews, war criminals, are hiding in Israel and hiding in Washington, D.C., because they are war criminals. And I would like to see George Bush drugged into the Hague and tried and found guilty and hung until he is dead. That's what I would like to see. Hey, boys, here you go. If you're not yet 35, you can be hired by the United States to work as an agent for the FBI. National Security Agency, that's the one to get into. CIA and other agencies. There you go. Come on, all you guys. You don't have any bunch of racist tattoos on you, and you've got a decent education, and you want to serve the movement? Come on, there you go. They pay pretty good, too. Dig in. A lone wolf gets into the right situations. Dig in. Get into the underground. How about that? Wouldn't that be cool? And then an old lone wolf FBI agent. NSA guy. Do it. You look clean cut, man. Get in there. Come on. We need you in there. to Wally Nigger Mart here in Milwaukee. I'm tightening my budget. Man, all I see is jiggies, Tom. I only saw a few white people there. I talked to the head security guy there, since I do security for a private firm and hires red hacks most of the time. The head security guy says that 92% of the shoplifters are niggers. Well, duh. But why should that not surprise us? Even ignorant whites, race mixers, i.e. nigger lovers, liberals, and the rest of the politically correct yikes knows this. Even more sleaze of the Southern Perversion Law Center knows this. Anyway, if welfare in Wisconsin was going like it is used to be, most of the black trash I saw today wouldn't be working here. So anyway, this was by my observation today. It's time to move out of the city, and then a nigger white trash whore lover comes on the bus, and she's got a fat round belly, and I thought, if I had a scope, there would have been hope. Remember, boys, with the scope, there's always hope, and I haven't gotten a call, so here we go, boys. Damn, you guys are glad for punishment. Yes, you are. Well, I was traveling from Montgomery. I had a gift all my bag when a stranger stopped beside me in an antique Cadillac. Now you're dressed like 1950, half drunk and hollow-eyed. You said it's a long walk to Nashville. Would you like a ride, son? Yeah, baby. Well, I sat down in the front seat, and he turned on that radio, and them sad old songs came out of those speakers with solid country gold. Then I noticed a stranger was ghost white pale when he asked me for a light. And I knew there was something strange about this ride. He said, "Drifter, can you make folks cry when you play and sing? Have you paid your dues? Can you moan the blues? Can you bend them guitar strings?" He said, "Boy, can you make folks feel what you feel inside? If you're on Big Star bound, let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride." Yeah, I don't teach you not to call. Then he cried to south of Nashville, and he turned the car around. And he said, "This is where you get off, boy, because I'm going back to Alabama." As I stepped out of that Cadillac, I said, "Mister, many things." He said, "You don't have to call me mister. The whole world calls me Hank." He said, "Drifter, can you make folks cry when you play and sing? Can you pay the dues? Can you moan the blues? Can you bend them guitar strings?" He said, "Boy, can you make folks feel what you feel inside? Let me a big star, pal. Let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride." "Drifter, can you make folks cry when you play and sing? Can you pay the dues? Can you moan the blues? Can you bend them guitar strings?" He said, "Boy, can you make folks feel what you feel inside? I'm your big star bound. Let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride. If you're big star bound, let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride."
Europe too. There should be no Muslims in Europe.
And so I supported him. I wasn't extremely happy with his problems with Croatia, because I have Croatian friends too. But I think he was a true Serbian nationalist, and I supported him during that struggle. But you see, this country, Washington, D.C., that run the show, they want to fight the Muslims, but they don't want to fight the Muslims, but they want to fight the Muslims. I mean, this is the most screwed up government I think that's ever been in existence. And of course, under George Bush, it's even gotten more screwed up. We will also never see a trial in the ICTY for Bill Clinton, or Madeleine Albright, the Jewish bitch, or Wesley Clark for the 1999 U.S. NATO bombing of Yugoslavia, nor will George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, or Donald Rumsfeld be prosecuted by an international tribunal for their war crimes in Iraq. NATO's invasion of Yugoslavia was a war of aggression that violated the UN Nations Charter. It was not undertaken in self-defense, nor did it carry the approval of the Security Council. Between 1,500 and 2,000 civilians were killed and many thousands injured. When I visited Belgrade a year after the NATO bombing, I saw schools, hospitals, bridges, libraries, homes reduced to rubble. These were white people, boys and girls. White people, white Serbs, bombed by your tax money. Bombed with your tax money, just like they did in Germany and many other places. You have a war. There is a war going on. It's between you and the system of the United States. And you can talk about Jew all you want. Yeah, there are Jews involved. And you can talk nigger through your blood, you know, till you're blue in the face. But your enemy, your main enemy, is who's in power running the government of the United States. And that's why Terrible Tommy is an insurgent. Here's a caller.
Hi, how are you?
How are you doing today in New York City?
I'm actually upstate. My phone's just from New York City. I just wanted to call. Last time you were on, you had a caller that you went to these European countries. He said, forget those countries, but they're a bunch of wimps, and I totally agree. I was in Germany and Poland and Hungary and Denmark over the summer, and every single country I went to, the people were really arrogant, and they just thought they were the greatest thing on the planet, and they were really elitist, and then when a Turk walked by or a Muslim, they would just bow down to them. It was really pathetic.
Well, that's why we have to change things. And to change things, we have to get more radical. We can't be conservative, we can't be reactionary, we gotta call a spade, and I do it all the time. I speak freely no matter where I go. When I'm out shopping or any place I go, I say what I think, and I think that's what we gotta do, and if it comes to blows and blood, that's what it's gotta be.
Yeah, I've had to.
There's no way out of this without an armed struggle, you know that, don't you?
You know why Europeans, though, are so afraid of fighting?
Oh, I don't know. And Europeans are great fighters. You just have to give them a reason to fight. No. There are a lot of good people over there. A lot of good people over there ready, very radical people ready to rise up, and some of them have already. Don't count Europe out. Do not count Europe or Britain out. We have great allies there.
That's true. I won't count them out. I'll just say, you know, there's like 100 Shabbos goy for every Jew.
There always has been. There always has been. There always has been. Thanks for calling in. That's the end of the show. Remember, the masses are asses. They always will be. Don't be discouraged by those people. Be a wolf.
Hey.
Yeah.
All right. So,
how did we do tonight? 115. Well, we're going up.
Yes.
Well, that was some good stuff, but the quality was pretty bad. I didn't have my Jewish crew here. And maybe we could clean it up a little bit. I like that show. And Hal Turner, I know what happened now. There for a few shows I did on his equipment, on his setup. And so he wasn't actually on the show. But I caught on to him pretty fast and got rid of him. Yeah. Of course, I remember him because I went up to Lansing when they were going to have a big Nazi demonstration. I wanted to see what was going to happen. And they had the courthouse place. They had a chain link fence around the whole front of the place to keep the Reds or whoever, you progressives, from storming the thing. There were only about 20 so-called neo-Nazis up there on the steps speaking with a bullhorn. But I thought it was funny because I had in my briefcase a yarmulke, a Jewish yarmulke. So I put it on, and I was out on the outside of the chain link with hundreds of these Reds, or whoever they were. They weren't our friends, screaming, yelling, and trying to tear the fence down. And here I was, one of the most known guys in the country as a racist. Nobody spotted me. So I got right up front on the chain link and put my fingers in the fence and started shaking the fence. Bring the fence down. Bring the fence down. Man, man. I joined right in with them. That was funnier than hell. And there I was with my Jew beanie on the top of my head. If you want to infiltrate, you wear a beanie, a Jew beanie. You can infiltrate about anything. They were grabbing and scraping, being super nice. All these progressives and liberals or whatever you want to call them, they were treating me like, you know, like a king right up on that fence. And they thought that was great, that they had a Jew there shaking the fence. Anyhow, that's the Lansing demonstration, which was more of this Hollywood Nazi bullshit. That's the last one I ever attended. Well, that's it for now. This looks like about an hour and 21 minutes. We may have to split this show up. We'll see what happens. See you tomorrow, Thursday.